At the close of his letter to the church in Rome, Paul writes this one little sentence: "Greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother who's been a mother to me." Now, Paul often does this at the end of his letters, lists people that he wants the church to greet, and usually I just skip past the names. I mean, we don't know who these people are, why are they important to us, but I invite you this morning to play a little biblical detective with me. Who was this Rufus, and why was he important to Paul? Well, we get our first clue in the Gospel of Mark. Mark, when he tells the story of Jesus' crucifixion, he says the soldiers conscript a man named Simon of Cyrene to carry Jesus' cross for him. He doesn't just identify him as coming from the region of Cyrene, he also adds that he is the father of Rufus and Alexander. Could this be the same Rufus, perhaps? Our next clue comes in Acts chapter 11, where we read about the beginning of the church in Antioch of Syria. You can see a picture of Antioch, modern day. It was built in the mountains, the homes literally built into the sides of the hills, and it occupied the center of an important trade route. The church in Antioch began because of a persecution that took place in Jerusalem, orchestrated by the Pharisee Saul. And because of this persecution, Christians spread out from Jerusalem and all other areas, trying to find safety. And Acts 11 tells us about a group of men from Cyrene, the same place where Simon was from, who came to Antioch. And when they arrived at Antioch, they did something different. Instead of just speaking to the other Jews who were in the city, they also began talking to the Greeks, the Hellenists, telling them the good news of Jesus Christ. And so this church in Antioch became the very first church to openly receive both Jews and Greeks into the same community. Now, the church in Jerusalem wanted to verify what was going on, and so they chose one of their leaders, a man named Barnabas, and sent him up to Antioch to observe the church. And when Barnabas arrived, he was so amazed at what he saw the Spirit of God doing in that church that he decided to stay on, except the church was growing so rapidly he couldn't keep up with it. And so Barnabas went to Tarsus to seek out a friend of his named Saul, the once Pharisee, whose persecution was actually the reason that the Antioch church even existed. And he brought Saul back to that church. And such was their grace that they not just welcomed and received him, but they even elevated him into leadership. And it's probably there in Antioch where Paul became acquainted with Rufus, whose father was Simon of Cyrene, whose mother was like a mother to Paul. Can you imagine a church like that? A church so radically inclusive that it not just receives foreigners and outsiders, but it even receives former enemies and welcomes them and elevates them into leadership. Can you imagine a church so outward focused that they would send out missionaries, Paul, Barnabas, Silas, their best leaders, to go out and plant and nurture new communities of faith? I mean, it was a place where lives were being changed every single day. Can you imagine? Actually, let's do that. This morning, I invite you to imagine that we are the Antioch Church and that we're gathered for our annual meeting today, 43 AD, and because Antioch was a progressive church, one where women served side by side with men in leadership, let's imagine that the lay leader of our church is none other than my wife. That part's probably not too hard to imagine. So if you would, give me a warm Antioch-worthy welcome for our lay leader.
Thank you. Thank you for that warm welcome. I appreciate it. Thank you, dear. You know, we have so much to be excited about here in Antioch. Antioch was just voted the number one city to raise a family in, totally beating Damascus, which is amazing. And you know, it's not just the city, but it's the church. Oh, our church community is known for being the church that creates first. Like, did you know that our church at Antioch was the church that coined the term Christian? It's true, it happened right over there. I was at the meeting and now everyone is saying it. Like, we're totally trendsetters. We also were the first church that allowed non-Jewish people to become members, which meant they no longer had to be circumcised to join the church. And from what I understand, for about half of you in the crowd, that's a really big deal. I mean, I don't personally know, but hey, we're an open community. Now, the third first is really my favorite, because we were the first church community to allow women to be in leadership. And so I am your lay leader, and it's still incredible for me to think that I can be leading in a church where there are men. And even more than that, I can preach in a church where there are men. And then I start thinking, maybe the possibilities for women are endless. Like, maybe when women get married, they'll keep their last name, or maybe they'll add their husband's last name to their last name. Maybe they'll use a hyphen, maybe they won't. I don't know, I'm still working it out, but it's out there, it's a possibility. And then I think maybe it's not just gonna be in churches where women are leaders, but maybe they will become bishops. Oh, and I bet that they will become leaders in the community, and they'll be mayors and governors, and even more, they'll become leaders in businesses. They'll create sugar-free wine, and it's gonna be amazing, and we're gonna take over the world, ladies. Who's with? Excuse me, yes. Okay. Thank you, dear, for reminding me to stay on script. So, let me just see where I was. Yes, okay, so we are here for our annual meeting. Is that good enough, honey, for you? Good, great. And as I was thinking about our agenda, I thought, I'm not even gonna really put one together. I mean, we can approve the budget later. It's not like we really stick to it anyway, so who cares about that? Instead, I decided to invite a beloved member to come and talk to us today about how he has seen God working in our church. Now, I'm going to tell you, he's really shy, and I had to do a little arm twisting to get him to come out. So I'm going to ask you to help me give him a very warm welcome as I introduce to you Rufus Sirena! Rufus! Sirena! Come on, Rufus! Everybody's excited. Rufus, so glad you can be with us. Just really excited. Okay. Good deal. Great.
She's terribly funny. I mean that. She's funny in a terrible way. I'm honored to be asked, but I'm not good at this. I would rather be where you are and listen to Barnabas or Paul up here. I ask forgiveness for my lack of eloquence, but how could I say no? I was asked to share about one of the most important things in my life, you, my family, my church, the place, the community where God's love became real to me. I know a lot of you know me, but you probably don't know much about me. So, what is it that they say? If you're going to start something, start at the beginning. You see, I'm not good at this. I thought that was funny. I'll tell you about Rufus, and you try to contain your excitement. Like many of you, I'm a Jewish Christian. You could say I'm a recovering Jew. When I was growing up, if the doors of the synagogue were open, my family was there. You see, I'm from Cyrene of Libya, North Africa. And Jews were persecuted there. And there's something about being persecuted. It makes you turn to your faith with an intensity. And I know some of you know what I'm talking about. Jews came to Cyrene because centuries ago, King Ptolemy sent Jews who spoke Greek to that region because he had been favorable to them. And he wanted them to influence the people of that region for him. That's how Jews came there, but because of a political decision. But I think you'll find, by the time I finish, that God used a decision by a king centuries ago to influence my life and use me today. I know it can get hard to see how God is at work sometimes, especially through some kings and the decisions they make. But you have to be patient to understand how God works. My father had this saying. He used to say, God's calendar has more pages than ours. I like that. Well, my father's name was Simon. As I said, our family was very devout. And every year, my father would travel to Jerusalem for the festivals. And he especially loved the Passover. And one year, he was attending the Passover. I had just come in from the countryside. He was on the outskirts of the city, but he could not go any further because the soldiers had made a barricade. And he couldn't go past. It was a crucifixion procession. And you know how Roman justice works. They move immediately from sentencing to execution. And three criminals had been condemned. So my father had to wait until they walked past, making their way to the place of execution. So he's standing there, and the first two go past, and my father said he could see their faces. He said they looked like men who belonged there. But the third lagged way, way behind. And as he got closer, my father said he could understand why. The first thing he noticed, he was wearing a laurel, a crown of these massive thorns that had been crammed into his head and blood trickling down his face. And when he got very close to my father, he could tell he had been scourged severely. His ribs were exposed. And when he got right next to my father, he fell down. And he couldn't stand because of the weight of the crossbeam on his shoulders. And so a soldier started kicking him. Now that makes sense, doesn't it? A man is too weak to stand up, so you're going to kick him until he regains his energy. That makes sense, doesn't it? Finally, I guess the soldier got tired from his kicking. And he turned around and pointed at my father, and my father knew what that meant. He had just been conscripted. And we know soldiers can do that, right? At any time, at any place, they can point out anyone and demand that they carry equipment or their pack up to 1 mile. And my father's heart sank. He knew that for him, this was going to just ruin his whole experience being at the temple and then going to the Cyrenian synagogue. Our town had its own synagogue for Cyrenian Jews. So when he got onto the road and bent over so the soldiers could put the beam on his back, he said he just started getting angry. He got mad at himself for being there in the first place. He got mad at that soldier for picking him. He got mad at the man for whatever he had done in his life to deserve this. As he was bent down and they were putting the beam on his back, he looked over at the man. And for this fleeting moment, my father said, their eyes caught one another. And he looked into this man's eyes. he didn't see somebody deserving death. He certainly didn't see a criminal. He said this man just looked different. And then the man said to him, through weak breath, "Thank you." And who thanks a person for carrying the cross he's going to die on? As they started making their way, my father said, things became stranger. Religious authorities walked alongside the procession and yelled taunts at this man who was already near death, yelling blasphemer, false prophet. When they finally made their way up the hill, and they took the crossbeam off of my father. He said he felt like he'd been released. He wanted to run. He wanted to get away as quick as he could. But he said, where do you go after that? You don't just walk away from something like that. And he wanted to find out what this man had done. He began to realize when the soldiers nailed a placard above his head, as the Romans will do sometimes, stating your conviction, except his said, "The King of the Jews." And the moment that they did that, the religious leaders just cried out in derision, "That's not true, that's what he claimed," they said. And my father realized that what they were doing was accusing him of being the Son of God. That meant he was a potential revolutionary, that he would disturb the peace. That would be enough to warrant his execution. My father said over the next few hours, he noticed the man every now and then would speak words. Most of the time he couldn't understand. He turned to one of the thieves and spoke. He looked his head up to heaven and spoke. But he said one time he looked at the leaders who were shouting in anger at him, and he heard my father say a prayer. "Forgive them. Forgive them." Finally, he looked up and he shouted the words, "It is finished." And his head slumped and he passed. Gradually, the religious leaders stopped their shouting and began to walk away. The soldiers went on about their business. The only people left was the man's mother, who was crying, and some friends who were around her. You know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Jesus. My father, Simon, was the man who carried his cross. But my father said that carrying his cross was not an honor that day. He felt as if he had participated in something very, very wrong. And he didn't know what to do about it. He felt sick. So he did the only thing he knew to do. He walked over to the man's mother and simply said, "I'm so sorry for you." And she embraced him. And my father said, would you tell me about your son? And for the next day and a half, she and the others who were there told my father about Jesus. His mother told about the night the angel visited before she was even expecting and said, "You will bear the Son of God." She told about the night he was born. The others told amazing stories about the miracles they had witnessed that they said truly happened. My father did go on to the Passover while he was there. I'm sorry, I know some of you aren't familiar with our customs. The Passover, it goes far back in history when our people were in captivity in Egypt, and when we were liberated under Moses, God used miracles, plagues, to convince Pharaoh to let our people go free. And the last one required was God sent an angel of death who passed over every home, striking down the firstborn son of that household. But the Hebrew homes were spared because they had been told every home to sacrifice a lamb and to take the blood of that lamb and paint it over the doorway. And the angel would pass over that house and they would be spared. My father said he could not get over the coincidence that the death of this man Jesus happened at Passover. On the third day, he heard stories that this Jesus was alive. And my father said something inside of him knew it to be true. And my father was not an easy sell. He continued to meet with this group to learn about what it means to follow. And many of them started telling their own stories of encountering the risen Jesus. And my father came to believe in him while he was there. Now, my father was not at the empty tomb, but he was at the cross. And it changed him. And it changed me. When my father came home, he told us about what had happened. And before long, we learned that other followers of Jesus were living in Cyrene, and we began to meet in a little community and to encourage each other and to pray. And I felt something special as a boy about these gatherings, that there was something different about these gatherings. And one day we moved here to Antioch. And one of you invited us to join you. And it was here that I came to understand what my father was talking about. It was here with you. There would be times when we would worship and we would sing, and it would feel like Jesus was standing right beside me. My father would always talk about the cross and Passover, the cross and Passover. And he would say, we no longer have to come and bring our sacrifice in order to be forgiven. God brings the gift to us. All we have to do is accept it. That in accepting that gift, God accepts us. My father said he thought for many years he had carried Jesus' cross, but he came to discover that Jesus had carried his cross. Here, you welcomed our family. From the outside, you did not know us, but you made us feel welcome, like we belong here. It was here because of the way you loved us that we understood how God loves us. I believe a person can come to believe in Jesus on his own, but a person is changed by God's love through people. I became a changed person through you. And then I didn't know I was doing anything wrong. I started inviting other people to come. I didn't know you were only supposed to invite Jewish people. But you welcomed them. You welcomed whoever came into the fellowship as if they belong. And you made me so proud that you would show no distinction between people, no differences, regardless of their race or men or women or wherever they were from. Everybody was welcome and understood that God loves everybody the same. I think that's why I was asked to come today. It's to encourage us to keep doing that. Out there, it's a different story. Out there, there's division, there's separation, and sometimes there's elimination. Our world needs more than ever a community that helps everybody find and give hope. Our world needs us. Our world needs us to extend that message to all people, to tear down the barriers and the separations, and to let them know that they should know God's love for them. So I was asked to come to ask you, who would you invite? Who would you keep inviting? Who would you keep welcoming? My father, he had this other saying. He would remember the day he stood at the foot of the cross. After Jesus died, he looked over at a soldier who looked up and said, "This must be the Son of God." He looked at the religious authorities who were shouting their taunts. He looked over at the other witnesses who were standing there. And he said, Jesus died for everybody. And then he had this saying, "The ground is level at the foot of the cross." The ground is level at the foot of the cross. You know what he's talking about, don't you?